All right, guys, we're here. Finally got Craig to work. Only took a whole lot of garbage. So we're the Grumpy Dungeon Masters. I'm the Grumpy Dungeon Master Jay. This is my co-host, Grumpy Dungeon Master Christopher Waples. Say hi, Chris.
I'm not Chris.
Wow, you sound really different today, Chris. You must have a cold.
No, I'm not Chris.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, well, who,
Dungeon Master Michael, I guess. Mike?
Okay. Well, yeah, Grumpy Dungeon Master Mike apparently is joining us. I think Chris is on vacation or yeah, something like that. I don't know. He
I can
doesn't
see
ever he
he's
never tells
gotten.
me. He's not the best communicator.
Your words, not mine.
Correct. Yeah, they are my words. I didn't know what day he was coming back from vacation. That's how good he communicates with us.
Does he know?
I don't know. Maybe not. I'm sure his wife told him what time or when they're coming back from vacation.
If she knows.
Yeah, I'm sure she knows.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, let's talk some D&D.
That's what we do.
Yeah, that is what we do. So Mike is a he's a player of mind and a part-time dungeon master since we literally have four fucking DMs in our play group, which is it's unheard of.
And then let's just face it, realistically, there's not enough time for every DM to actually DM.
No, there isn't. And scheduling conflicts lately have been horrible.
When's the last time we even rolled dice?
3 weeks ago?
I think so. Between
Not.
people getting sick, going to concerts, and other scheduling conflicts.
Yeah, just because this is a holiday weekend, so we're like, oh, we have 4 days to find time to play D&D. Nope.
And we still couldn't find time.
We did find some board gaming at least, so that was something to hold us over.
Yeah, I'm not going to complain about board gaming. We have more of those than we'll ever be able to play, too.
That's actually a true statement. I know for a fact I own more than 100 board games. I know for fucking certain I do. I've added them up before.
I've got about
And
20 sitting on the floor behind me right now.
I would say at least a quarter of the ones I own I have never played, and another quarter of them I played once, maybe twice.
And then there's
It's
a rotating selection of about five that get constantly played.
Yeah, we do have certain ones we really enjoy. DC Deck Builder gets a lot of play time, or at least it used to. There's the other one, the Dark Elves. I don't remember the name of it off the top of my head, but the one where you're all Dark Elves, it's sort of a deck builder board game.
Oh.
I'd have to get up. I'd have to get up from my desk to go find the name.
The Tyrants of the Underdark?
That's it. Yeah, Tyrants of the Underdark.
Wow, I'm surprised I remembered that.
Yeah, we played that one a lot. But anyway, so I sent you that video earlier about the quote unquote D&D 1, the virtual tabletop, and all of the issues that that is going to bring for Dungeons and Dragons. And
Yeah.
so me and you, first off, neither of us are into online D&D. Like I personally fucking detest it with a passion. What's your feelings on it?
More or less about the same. I strongly believe that Dungeons and Dragons is best enjoyed in person, on a table, pen and paper, and loads of imagination.
Yeah.
Your imagination is what's going to drive this story more than the minis that you've got on the table or the TV screen that you're playing on. Because, ugh.
Yeah. Yeah, the biggest thing that the guy pointed out in that video, and it really kind of stood out to me, was the ch in when I first started playing Dungeons and Dragons, way the fuck back when in the 90s. it was sort of a loose rule system. Second edition was very kind of loose on the rules, and everything was theater of mind. We didn't really have minis. We didn't have this grand board laid out before us. And I've run you guys a lot of times, and I run that way a lot of the time with no minis and just here's what you see. And then we just sort of work through it.
Yeah. And what do you do with the information presented to you?
Yeah. And no matter what edition you're running, that still leaves you a lot of creativity as to what you as a player or a DM can do.
Mm-hmm.
And if you start adding in minis, it doesn't necessarily remove that factor, but it does sort of make your mind limit what you're capable of doing because you're seeing the physical board. And it sort of is the example that he gave with the virtual tabletop, because you're dealing with programming at that point. You are you're in a hard limitation as to what you can actively do in a video game. And so, you know, in the example he gave, say there's a chandelier. You can't interact with that chandelier. It's not really there.
Yeah.
So if I'm a player and I say to the DM in this virtual tabletop, well, I would like to make an acrobatics check to, you know, leap off the balcony onto this chandelier and swing and kick a bad guy, you just can't. It physically isn't possible because the programming will not allow it.
Yeah, exactly. You're exactly right. And the chief difference there is the difference between a physical object combined with your imagination and something that is not real at all. A bunch of ones and zeros that can only do what they're told. Imagination be damned.
Yeah. Yeah, at least with the minis, if the DM doesn't have a chandelier set up, which would be really kind of hard, you know, they're still giving you a description of the room. And you can even...
Does the ceiling fan count?
Do what?
Does the ceiling fan in the room count?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but you know, you get a good description of everything in the room, or at the very least, if you could ask what you see, and if they give you, oh, there's the chandelier, at that point, even with the minis there, you could say, okay, I'm going to try to do this thing. But
yeah,
in the virtual tabletop, I don't think things like that are even going to be possible. And I understand like why they're wanting to go virtual tabletop, because a large portion of D&D players only play online. Our buddy Panda, who we've had on here a couple of different times, we do a lot of video gaming with him. He only plays and runs online.
Really?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, there's a large portion of the player base that only do it online.
Interesting. See, I would have thought that you would have had a greater percentage of players that would play in person as opposed to online. I didn't realize it was that prolific of a thing.
I think the vast majority of people play in person, and I don't have hard numbers in front of me, obviously, but I would not be surprised if it was at least a third or even up to a half that play only online or majority online.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, I wonder how much of that's a generational thing, or if it's widely accepted.
Yeah. But the virtual tabletop thing, for me specifically, it's the same thing as when I ran the Icewind Dale campaign online during COVID. It was fun, and I really enjoyed it. But there's two major factors. One is the amount of time it takes to set up. Yeah. Like me as the DM, I have to get these maps. I have to make sure they all lay out perfectly. I have to have all of these things. And with a virtual tabletop, that you can just spend the money and have all that shit for quick and instant uploads for a lot of things. Maybe not if you're designing your own maps, but if I'm just running a pre-built module that they've already got installed, that's quick and simple. But for me, the biggest problem I always had was the not having ability to hold side conversations. You know, the DM's talking, and if you're in person, the DM can be talking, and me and the guy next to me, like, who all sits next to me anyway in gaming?
Let's see.
Yeah,
usually on the left.
Yeah, Muffin's on to my right, and I think you sit to my left.
Yeah, that's usually about right. And Drew sits to me, and Johnny opposite you, and Chris on Johnny's left.
Yeah, so while somebody's in the middle of combat or whatever, the two or three of us might be just having a little quiet side conversation. And that's just not possible online. It just isn't.
Yeah. I mean, the best you can do is a direct message to the DM, but you can't convey tone over text. Like, if I'm trying to be sneaky or if I'm really angry at somebody, I can't convey that through text.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's the whole social media problem. You can't properly convey the right emotions online.
That's a whole different can of worms altogether.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it definitely is. But just not being able to hold little side conversations, not being able to see people face-to-face is a problem. I think maybe in 20 years or so, when the quote-unquote metaverse... when that fully is integrated and you can have your own little avatars sitting at a table playing D&D, and if they can actually get the audio quality, so if I look to the person to my right, only they hear it fully.
I mean, you're talking straight up virtual reality stuff there, man.
Yes. Yeah, which I think...
Not the same, because you mentioned being able to look at people's faces. Somebody's facial expressions as they're playing a game can be a dead giveaway as to what they're thinking sometimes. And that's valuable data, too, just as much as side conversation that you're never going to get online.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. If the technology can catch up, and I think someday it will, probably 20 or 30 years down the line, but
I'm not wearing a motion capture suit to play D&D.
You don't have to wear a motion capture suit. So I actually listened to the podcast very recently, the last week, I think, where Joe Rogan actually had, what's the asshole from Facebook's name?
Zuckerberg?
Yeah, he actually had a
he's quiet. He's going to silence us if you talk too bad about him.
Yeah, I know, right? But no, like, Joe Rogan had a 2 or 3 hour conversation with Mark Zuckerberg, and they talked heavily about the metaverse and where he wants to go with it. And that is sort of the thing. Like, at some point, they're going to just have sensors that can read your face and read all the details of it. So you could convey that online fairly easily.
Yeah, I guess in a sense that already exists with, am I still here?
Yeah, I still hear you just fine.
Okay, sorry, my screensaver cut on and I panicked. But in a sense, that technology already exists. Like with an iPhone, you can make little cartoon images of yourself that react to your expressions.
Yeah, that's less of the virtual reality and more of the AR, the altered reality. But yeah, that's basically what he's trying to build, is something like that, where you know, with the metaverse, you're sitting in a room. So if they can get that level of it, and the audio, if they can fix the audio issues of not being able to actually hold side conversations, then I would be all for it. Because at that point, it is going to feel like you're sitting there in a room with people playing D&D.
But you know what's not going to feel right? You're not going to have dice in your hand.
Well, there's nothing that says you can't hold some dice in your hand, shake your hand, and then roll it there. It's not going to be quite the same, but it would be a lot closer.
Okay. Electric dice that are connected to the metaverse that automatically read what they roll as I roll them, before I roll them.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, there's no reason that they wouldn't be able to program that. If it can read your facial expressions, I don't see why they couldn't have sensors that read what your dice are.
Mm-hmm.
But that, you know, this is down the line. This is not what's coming in the near future. The virtual tabletop thing,
it's a glorified video.
Yeah, it's just going to be a video game, basically. with very limited programming, full of microtransactions. Have no doubt.
Oh, those are the worst evil of all in modern video gaming.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, tell me about it.
Digital downloads and microtransactions. There's nothing that says, okay, I spent 50 real world dollars to buy this pack of imaginary goblins for my online D&D. There's nothing stopping them from editing your goblins or just, you know, eventually phasing your goblins out altogether without your consent. It's like buying a digital movie. It's not real. It's not a real thing. You don't own it. You're never going to own it, no matter how much cash you fork out. It's not yours. It's Wotzi's.
Yeah. I have never bought a digital movie. I've rented online movies, you know, which I understand that. I'm renting it for 24 hours or whatever to watch it. Yeah. But purchasing of it, I will never do that. I will only, if I really want that movie, I'm buying the goddamn DVD of it.
Yeah. At least that's a physical thing that you can see and hold and own.
Yeah. Yeah. Paramount or fucking Disney can't come and take that away from me. I own it. It's physically here. You can't just say, oh, no.
Wrong house now, boy.
Yeah. Definitely. You're not wrong. They could, you know, like, Wotzi could release something on the virtual tabletop, you know, I don't know, a mask or something, and that mask looks fucking awesome. And so you spend your $5 on it to get that mask for your character, not for stats or anything, but just for the look. And then later on, some, you know, some assholes on Twitter could say, I don't like this thing. It's horrible. You know, why would Wotzi release this? And bam, Wotzi just removes it because
it's
of...
Gone.
Yeah, because of people complaining or for whatever reasons.
Seeing that in their published works, even. As soon as they see something, they're immediately stopping the presses and rewriting it.
Yeah, I mean, they did rewrite the entire Ravenloft game and re-released it. You know, that's a money move as much as anything.
Oh, yes.
But, yeah, because the bottom dollar is all they really and truly give a shit about at this point. It's one of the reasons I think they're pushing so hard for this virtual tabletop stuff, because of microtransactions, because, oh, well, you've already purchased Tomb of Annihilation. Well, if you want to run it here, you have to give us another $30 to get the entire map and all of the minis and everything for it.
Yeah. Merchandising. That's where the real money from the movie is made.
You're not wrong. And neither was Mel Brooks.
Nope, and that's exactly what they're going to do with the movie too. Just you wait, like a week before it releases, they're gonna release a D&D, the movie, the board game, the RPG box set.
Yep, all the toys, all the pop figures. You're going to have in the virtual tabletop, you might have downloadable skins to make you look like those, or make your character look like the ones from the movie. Yeah, there's going to be just a Chris Pine skin in the virtual tabletop, I'm sure, at some point.
The thought of that is infinitely funny to me.
Kind of terrifying, but, you know, I get it.
Who's the guy, the older actor that's playing?
Hugh, not Jackman, Hugh Grant. Hugh Grant,
He's going to run around as Hugh Grant. Except he's going to be gnome-sized. He's going to be a gnome Hugh Grant.
I'm going to be pissed off if I can't run around as Jeremy Irons. Or Marlon Wayans. Snails!
There's potential there, but it's still not good.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, it's weird. It's just one of these things. And for somebody like me, it's very hard to fully accept all of this. Because I say it all the time. I've been playing a long fucking time. I'm not a young man at this point.
You're not an old man either.
No, I'm middle aged, but I went from seeing TSR. And TSR, when I started, was fucking huge. They were a big damn company. But all they owned was Dungeons and Dragons. There was nothing else. And TSR made some mistakes along the way and so forth. And they got bought out by Wizards of the Coast. And Wizards of the Coast
ended up bought up by Hasbro.
Yeah, Wizards of the Coast at the time they bought TSR was a pretty big company, specifically because of Magic the Gathering.
But, oh yeah, that's bread and butter. Still is.
Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah. But you're talking at that point, you know, they're worth $100 million or whatever. Mm-hmm. So they buy up TSR, which is having a lot of problems. And then they alter the edition to go from second to third, which is a smart move. But third edition was really, really good. It was a lot of good changes to the game. And
I think most people would agree with that.
I think the vast majority of players who have gone through that transition would agree with that statement. And, you know, that ran for a good decade plus, and they released a shit ton of material and a lot of novels, and third edition was kicking ass. But yeah. But I don't know if they got bought out by Hasbro before fourth edition or after.
I think it was after. I'm pretty sure fifth edition is the Hasbro product.
I think so. But they could just sort of smell the money of the video game world. And that's why they went with fourth edition, because it's very board game. It's very video game-esque. If you've played the board games, fourth edition plays like that.
I stand corrected. A quick Google search shows me that Wizards was bought by Hasbro in 1999.
Okay. So a little bit before fourth edition. So you start getting these Hasbro executives coming in and telling them the money is in video games. That's likely where that happened. And
it makes sense. Yeah, look at the fourth edition. It was very gamified, so to speak.
Yeah. You go from having this private company, which was Wizards of the Coast, that's literally run by, and it's all gamers. You know?
Yeah.
Like, they love the game. And then you get these executives, and I've seen it a million times with other companies when they get bought out. You have these big-time execs who only care about the dollar and how they can squeeze the most out of whatever company they've just purchased.
Mm-hmm. And, it changes every aspect of a company.
It does. And the transition from third edition to fourth edition was fucking terrible. Everyone hated fourth. So they get some gamers in and put them sort of over the company and find that nice little, you know, niche to make that transition to a game system that does not suck, but they can still sort of squeeze all the profits out of. That's fifth edition.
Yeah.
And now sixth edition, it's just going to get fucking worse, man. They're gonna microtransaction the shit out of everybody.
Because they can. And they're going to do it to physical game players just as much as they can. It's going to be harder with the physical players, depending on what model they choose to publish their stuff.
Well, physical players, in truth, it's very difficult to microtransaction if they don't want it to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Like I am averse to buying stuff that I'm not ever going to use. So I only buy the books that I'm actually going to get use out of. I never buy any of the adventure books. I don't buy any other, you know, they have all these little dice gift sets that come out with every adventure book. They have all this other, you know, the spell cards and stuff, things like that. I just don't care about that shit.
I found the spell cards to be just completely useless to me. They just got in the way.
I didn't find them useless. I did buy the sorcerer pack because I was playing I was playing Mikhail at the time. And yeah. I played around with them for a while. They were kind of neat, but they didn't really and truly help the game any. For a new player, that actually might be a useful thing to have. So for somebody like myself who's got years of experience, it's just a thing.
I mean, I've already got the data printed in the handbook.
Yeah, it's all there in the handbook. It's all in alphabetical order. It's not hard to find what I need. And if you're playing a spellcaster, you need to have an idea of what you're doing before your turn starts anyway.
And if you're not casting Fireball, you're doing it wrong.
80% of the time, that is correct. Hmm. So sometimes you need to dimension door occasionally before you Fireball.
I don't think I have ever cast Dimension Door.
Ah, but it's such a good spell. It puts up to 150 feet between you and the bad guys, so you can fireball them from a distance.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
But yeah, they're definitely going to try to microtransaction the physical players, but they realize it's just so much easier to do this shit online. They're going to have to spend a lot of money up front getting this thing rolling, but once that virtual tabletop is in full effect, it's not going to cost them a hell of a lot of money to just keep it going, other than hiring some programmers to keep making, new stuff.
Yeah, and they're honestly, they've probably been working on this since they acquired, who was it they bought it? Was it D&D Beyond? They bought it outright, didn't they?
Yeah. They picked up D&D Beyond, and that's like part of the infrastructure is already there.
Yeah.
So now they just need to, they need to build the engine, basically, I think, behind it, and then just get people start programming all of the modules that already exist.
That's a big chore.
It is. None of this is going to be quick. This takes time. But it is where they want to go, because it's where the most money's at.
Unfortunately, but it's not something I'm going to spend any money on at all.
Yeah, pretty much.
I'll buy if I read through the 6th of 1D&D or whatever the heck they're going to call it edition, and I happen to like it, I'll buy a physical copy of the books if I like it.
Yeah. It's one of these things. Me and Waples had talked about it a bit. It's almost certainly going to be referred to as 6th edition at this point.
Yeah, but unofficially, that's what everyone's going to call it.
Yeah, unofficially, it's just 6th edition. Everybody already sort of understands this. But I think with their virtual tabletop, it probably will be referred to as 1D&D. Because you have... It's that separation of the online from the physical. That book that they release, it might say 1D&D on the cover or whatever. Yeah. But everybody's just going to call it 6th edition. People, when they played Dungeons & Dragons back in the 80s and 90s, they didn't call it Advanced Dungeons & Dragons. It was just D&D, even though there actually was two different types of Dungeons & Dragons.
AD&D.
Advanced Dungeons & Dragons was AD&D, but we still didn't call it that. We just called it D&D, even though basic D&D was just D&D.
You're still going to get together with your friends and play D&D.
Yeah, it was all D&D. It didn't matter what it is.
It's like calling a soda a Coke in the Deep South. They're all Coke.
Yeah, it's all Coke. Well, now, if you call it a pop down here, you're in trouble.
If you call it a pop, you're going to get some weird looks.
Yeah, you're a Yankee, and you're from the Chicago area. We already understand that.
Go back home, Snowbird.
Yep. Yeah, I actually have relatives that live near Chicago, and anytime I would get... No, I liked them. I had a good time. My cousin Randy lived up there. He's a fun dude. But anytime as a kid, we'd go up there and hang out with them. They always called soda or Coke pop, and it was just the weirdest fucking thing to me.
That is weird.
Yeah. I call it soda. I know here in the South, a lot of people just call it all Coke, but yeah.
It could be Surge, and you're still going to call it a Coke.
Yeah, what kind of a Coke do you want? I'll take an orange Coke.
You mean orange Coke or Sunkist?
Yeah, exactly. Sunkist is orange Coke. I'll take a grape Coke.
A lemon lime Coke, please.
Yep, that's a Sprite. Or 7-Up, whatever you have on hand at the time.
Oh, man. I had a thought a minute ago. You're talking about, they're wanting to go to the online with 1D&D. It's effectively just going to be like playing an adventure system board game.
Yeah. Basically, that's what it is.
You'll have your quote-unquote DM, and all he's going to be doing is moving the monsters. And that's all you're going to be doing is just click, point, click, point, click.
Yeah.
It just sounds horribly boring to me.
I mean, it's not,
not that the Adventure System games are boring, no, but the online thing.
It's not going to be a hell of a lot of difference between when I ran on Roll20. It's just going to look a lot prettier. I don't know what engine they're building it in. Probably Unreal, or I think the new Unreal engine came out not long ago, so that's probably what they're building it in. So
I wonder how stable it's going to be, because like when we tried to run things during the dark time, the plague times, we tried to run things briefly on a virtual tabletop, and wouldn't work.
Well, okay, let's be honest. I'm trying to remember the name of that virtual tabletop I used. I think it was just Tabletop. Where are you?
It's called Virtual Tabletop.
Yeah, it was Tabletop Simulator. That was the first
Tabletop. That's what it was.
Yeah, Tabletop Simulator. That was the first one I tried to run our online game with. And it worked good for me, but I have a high-end computer. You have probably the next most high-end computer out of the play group. Everybody else was just struggling to even have a computer.
And mine was still a potato.
Yeah. And so, like, Tabletop Simulator is just not going to work on anything that just, you know, if you can't play modern video games on your computer, it just isn't going to work. And I guarantee you that it's, you know, the 1D&D virtual tabletop, I guarantee you it's going to have that same issue, because they're... Yeah. I think they're looking to use the new Unreal Engine, which means you're going to have you will need a high-end computer to be able to run it.
It's got system requirements, and if you don't meet them, sorry.
Yep. Yeah, don't try to potato through it.
Consoles. They could say, hey, here's your PS5 version or your Xbox, and that might work.
Yep. Yeah, like they could probably build it for like the new PS5 or whatever the next Xbox is. I'm sure they'd be able to run it on those systems.
If they go that route with it at all.
Long term, I guarantee you they want to.
It won't be
their bread and butter, but I guarantee you they want to have it as a part of their thing, because there's a lot of gamers who play on consoles, and there's a lot of money there.
I mean, look at the money EA makes just on their stupid sports games that they release the same game every year.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know how, but people still seem to keep buying John Madden's.
It's sports ball 5,000 in the year 1984, folks. And it's just football, yeah. It's the same game every year.
Yep, just update the player roster. Every 5 years or so, you have to change a couple of the buttons up. That's important.
Oh, yeah. That's very important. Yep. You can't let people get too complacent.
Yeah. I mean, anywhere they can find that money, they're going to, I think. But, I remember even just running Roll20, which has almost no requirements for it.
Yeah.
When I tried running the lighting on there, it...
Light and shadows, man. It didn't like it.
Yeah, it ran great for me, and only me.
Yeah, it got ugly for everybody else. I mean, even on my end, it was struggling to keep up with what was going on.
Yep. Yeah, just the beauty of D&D, it's not in the virtual tabletop. The beauty of D&D is at the table with all the other players and using your damn imagination to create scenarios that you just can't do online.
Absolutely, man. I mean, I was reading a scenario. I'm studying the Curse of Strahd book again, because I'm going to run it for you guys pretty soon. And
I cannot wait.
I'm looking forward to killing all of you with glee. But and without spoiling anything, one of the scenarios I was reading was describing something that was completely impossible online. Like, as you're walking through this building, the building changes. Starts attacking you as you're walking through it. The doors and windows get boarded up, and the fireplaces are roaring and crap. And if you're sitting there describing this to your players, they're painting that picture in their heads dynamically as you're describing it. You can't do that online. You can't.
Not unless the programming has already been done in the virtual tabletop. You could do it on Roll20, you can't physically change the map super easily. You can, but it's you know, you have to have prepared it. But on a virtual tabletop, there's no chance in hell.
But in person, when you can do things on the fly, like, okay, let's just say I need a map. Well, here's a grid board and some minis. Put them here, 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 and here. All right, there's the map.
Yeah.
I did that in 5 seconds.
Yep.
Try doing now, something on the fly online.
Yeah, now I will say with, like, Tabletop Simulator, I was not real experienced with it. I guarantee you that you could alter a map reasonably easy. I know I could set pieces together and lock them together. So just assuming a wall got moved or something around, I could just drag and drop if everything was already prepared ahead of time.
Yeah.
But it's that preparation time as well. I'm a busy dude. I don't have a hell of a lot of time to prepare for a normal game of D&D with no minis at all.
Same. I mean, prepping as a DM is already difficult enough. And when you're throwing in extra prep time that you're going to have to do on top of your, you know, your brief studying that you've got, your notes you're wanting to take, it just further complicates the game.
Yeah. Hey, bro, I heard you like prep time, so I got some more prep time to go through prep time.
No, I don't like prep time. I just want to sit down and play. Tough.
Yep. Yeah, it is one of the reasons that I've gotten into a habit a lot of times of literally just writing down notes for a D&D game. Yeah. If I'm running a dungeon or something, I'll actually have the dungeon mapped out and so forth. But if I'm not running a dungeon, if I'm doing overworld stuff, no, this shit's going to be kind of freeballed and just created on the fly. I'll know what monsters I'm using and what the scenarios are, but beyond that, I'm not going to spend more than half an hour.
And that's really all you're going to need, man. I mean, what you weren't prepped for, well, you've probably got easy access to it in a monster manual or DMG or something.
Yeah. And you guys do occasionally throw in a twist, and I just come up with shit on the fly, and then I forget to write down the notes about it, so I'm going to ask you guys about it 6 months later if it's necessary.
Hey, what was that item that you got from that guy on that island that was infested by a walking shark? Do you remember?
Yeah, I already realized I'm going to have to ask Johnny a question about the story that I gave him a while back, because if I didn't, I have some notes. But if I didn't write it down, I'm going to have to ask him because it will come back up here soon.
Oh, no. I don't even remember that ever even happening.
Because of the storyline I gave him, remember, he's supposed to go and basically break up the organization that was created, the Grigori Guard, under his name.
Oh, yeah, that's right. He absolutely hates those guys.
Yeah, and I had given him a piece of information, and I'm just hoping I wrote it down, because if I didn't, I'll have to ask him about it, and maybe he remembers. Best scenario is I wrote it down. Second best scenario is he doesn't remember what I told him, so then I'll just make shit up.
You can make shit up and go with it. Yeah, that's totally what you're supposed to do.
Yep. It's good being a DM.
It's good to be the king.
All right. Let's move on past the virtual tabletop. We still had a couple other topics that we wanted to cover. The board games, you had just brought them up recently.
Yeah. Played one of them last night.
Yeah, we played Dungeon of the Mad Mage last week, and then
Temple of Elemental Evil. God, I hate that game.
Yeah, the Temple of Elemental Evil, and you had you pointed it out to me that game is imbalanced as shit, and I own that game. I had played that game, and I never really thought about it being imbalanced until I had played Dungeon of the Mad Mage last week.
Yeah, they've definitely gotten better at making the games a lot less horrible.
Dungeon of the Mad Mage, it was actually really well balanced. We made it to the last fight with a good stack of hit points and everything, and we still lost. We still lost.
But we learned an important lesson. I don't know what that lesson was, but we learned it.
Yeah. But the Temple of Elemental Evil, which was the third one of them they released, I think.
Might have been the fourth.
It's pretty early, though. Like, these came...
Ravenloft, the Shardalon. I think there was another one, and then Elemental Evil.
I'm looking them up.
You got them pulled up in another tab.
Okay, so in... That is definitely not in order. But the six of... there are six of them. There's the first one was Castle Ravenloft. I know that. The second was The Legend of Drizzt. The third, I think, was Temple of Elemental Evil.
What about Wrath of Shardalon?
I think Wrath of Shardalon was fourth, but it's one of third or fourth. Those two are one of the one or the other. Tomb of Annihilation was fifth,
and then Mad Mage
was sixth. But yeah, those are at least those first. I know Wrath of Shardalon is actually reasonably well balanced.
Never played.
Okay, well, I'll bring it over sometime. I remember being pretty well balanced, but then again, my thoughts on Temple of Elemental Evil were skewed, so maybe it isn't.
It's probably going to be even worse.
Probably. I know the characters kind of sucked, and at least the clerics throughout most of these games are fucking terrible.
Yeah.
How the best one is The Legend of Drizzt, where you do not have a cleric.
Oh, that's a bad idea.
Well, it's the characters from the novels.
Oh, is it?
Like it's Drizzt, Bruenor, Wulfgar, Caddy Bree. I think Regis is playable, Jarl Axel, and Artemis and Treri.
Oh, that's kind of cool. And that's another thing they've completely failed to do with 5th edition on a tangent, is any extra media like novels.
Oh yeah. I bitch about it all the time. They do comic books at least. But I want novels, man. Novels are where it's at. I say that they did just release a new Dragonlance novel.
Really?
It just came out. There was this was a whole to do. So I think it was Margaret. Or it was Tracy Hickman and his wife, I think, who wrote it.
They're the ones that did the original Ravenloft, aren't they?
No, they were the original Dragonlance people. So Margaret Weiss, Tracy Hickman, and Laura Hickman were the original Dragonlance people. And they've just written novels together a whole bunch of times over the years. A lot of the Dragonlance stuff was written by them.
They also did write Ravenloft.
Did they? Okay. I was not aware of that. But anyway, they had gotten into a contract with WotC to release new Dragonlance novels, obviously as a precursor to the new Dragonlance stuff that's coming out.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know what happened. There was a big to-do. There were lawsuits that were thrown around because WotC ended up not wanting to release the novels. I don't know if it was how they had written them or whatever the fucking issue was. But anyway, they settled the lawsuit. As far as I know, Hickman and Weiss, they're not with WotC anymore. But the novel, it's supposed to be a three book series that are released. The first one is apparently out.
Do you know what it's called? I might have to see if I can find an audiobook of it.
I don't have a clue. I know I will be picking it up as soon as I get a chance to, though.
I probably will, too. Should be good reading.
Yeah, I love their stuff. They've gotten better over the years. Like, the early Dragonlance stuff is kind of corny and poorly written, but most authors' first few books are pretty bad typically. So
exposition, lots of foundational story, and not much in the way of anything else.
It sort of rushes through a lot of things, and it's very tropey.
Those are always fun.
Look, it is what it is, it's early D&D stuff.
I mean, what would D&D be without the, you meet in a tavern trope?
The first book is literally all of the heroes coming back from a journey, an adventure, and meeting up again at a tavern where they all grew up at.
Wow. I did not realize it was that cliched.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's the first book. And then the... they talk about wars that are going on and all this other stuff, but then immediately after, the town gets besieged by goblins and orcs, so they end up fleeing, and then thus the adventures really begin. And you've got all of your main characters right there together.
That's kind of funny.
Yep.
That's literally like they pulled that from somebody's session one.
It almost certainly was. I wouldn't be surprised if that's because I'm pretty sure that the Dragonlance setting was it belonged to them, and at least a couple of them played D&D with some of their friends together in that setting, and then that ended up just becoming novels.
Yeah. It's kind of like what we need to do with our ongoing sagas between you and Johnny.
Yeah, no shit. I know if Forgotten Realms was the same way, Greyhawk was the same way. Like, a lot of that stuff was just based off of people's whole novels. Eberron was absolutely that. It was just a setting somebody had created and won a contest to get published.
Yeah.
But anyway, so the board game that we played, there was one other thing that really stood out to me that I had no fucking clue Watsy was doing. And it was the minis. So we're playing last night. It was the Temple of Elemental Evil. And I'm looking on the board and I got confused because some of the minis were painted and some of them were not. So I'm just thinking, oh, well, you might got somebody to paint these minis, or he painted them himself. And then you pointed out to me, no, half the minis on the board were out of the little box sets that they had been selling.
Absolutely. WizKids is the same company that makes the board games and the minis. So those minis are doing double time as blind boxed, pre-painted, and unpainted in your board game. Unless you spend extra to get pre-painted board game minis. They're the same thing.
Like, that is such a cheap-ass way to do it. You can buy the board game and get all the minis that are in that board game. Oh, and we're going to go ahead and release the Temple of Elemental Evil stuff out into the wild, so you can just buy these little boxes to get the pre-painted ones.
Oh, yeah. It's fantastic. It's brilliant, really, if you think about it.
You money-grubbing little shits.
Exactly what they're doing. I don't think it's quite as prolific now as it was. The last adventure system was a standalone expansion called Ghosts of Saltmarsh, and they're still making minis that aren't even related to that at all.
Yeah. I'm sure when they released the little boxes for the Temple of Elemental Evil that weren't related to the board game, there were probably some other minis in there that are not in the board game.
Yeah.
Like, I'm almost positive of that. But at the same time, but if I've already bought the goddamn board game, I don't want to be getting the same minis.
Yeah, exactly. It's like when Dungeon of the Mad Mage came out, I paid extra to get the pre-painted minis in the board game because I was tired of looking at the ugly ones.
Sure.
And they released the blind boxes. Well, the blind box Hallister Black Cloak you get is the exact same dude that's in the board game. Same exact mini.
Well, that would just piss me off. It doesn't bother me because I don't buy the blind box minis.
Yeah.
But if I was a guy who was doing that, I would be pretty upset if I was buying the board game and those.
Yeah, it's a crappy business tactic.
Yeah, it's like I said, it's all about the money at this point.
How can we nickel and dime our consumer? Pretty soon that's going to turn from physical goods like minis to binary ones and zeros like digital minis.
Yep.
There I go harping on them again.
Yeah, I can't help it, man. It pisses me off a lot of the time.
Sure.
The last thing, and this is something I can sit here and bitch about Watsy, but occasionally they do something good and right.
What did they do right?
The surveys. All right.
Oh, yeah.
So let me bitch first about getting to the surveys.
Because it only took an hour to do it.
Yeah, like last podcast or two, I complained about just trying to find the new UA, which literally I had to go through four links just to get to the Unearthed Arcana to see the changes they were making for 6th edition.
Yeah.
And then I had to find the survey. I asked you guys where the survey was at, and while I was waiting on a response, I ended up finally finding it. I had to go to Reddit or somewhere else to find a direct link just to get the survey. Yeah.
Stupid, because they post on their Facebook, hey guys, the survey's live, here's a link, and the link just takes you to a generic splash page for D&D Beyond.
Yes, it takes you to their one D&D bullshit where I then have to click through four links just to get to the survey, which is literally on the exact same page as the new UA.
It's almost like they didn't want you to find the survey.
They didn't want you to find the UA either. But, okay, so at least they are offering the survey once you figure out where it's at. And anyone who has not filled out the survey, I highly suggest do it. And please take time and give them actual good feedback. I personally spent well over an hour filling out this survey, which I could have just clicked through the damn thing and been done in 5 minutes.
But that comments section at the bottom there.
Yeah, I used the comment section on probably half of the questions they asked. And they asked very specific questions going through the entirety of the Unearthed Arcana for 6th edition. Or 1D&D or whatever the fuck they're calling it. And I filled it out. I took my time. I made sure I gave good feedback where necessary, whether it be positive, like the positive stuff, the positive changes. I made sure to tell them this is a good change. I like this change. And there weren't many of them, but there were a couple.
Yeah, the same here. They're, you know, where they're doing right, they need to know that they're doing right. And where they're doing wrong, they need to know that they're doing wrong.
Yeah. I think the biggest one that I had was the Ardling.
You mean the thing that should be Isomar?
Oh, my, that was literally what I wrote in the comment section. You already have the ASMR, use them.
Right? I don't want to walk around like having a human's body and a pig's head.
No, I it's just stupid. The stats for the Ardling are perfectly fine. I have zero issue with those. Just call them a fucking ASMR, change the way they look to look like ASMR. Boom, problem fucking solved.
Amen. I mean, I love the abilities they have, the little dash thing where they sprout wings and just 30 feet forward. It's great. I like that. But why do I got to have an animal's head?
Yeah. And to be all honest, if this ends up getting released and if I end up even touching 6th edition and there are no ASMR, there's only Ardlings. In my world, there's just ASMR. There are no Ardlings.
Ardlings don't exist. That's a good privilege DMs and players have.
Yep. And that's exactly how I would run it. I mean, they stat-wise, they're fine. They get rid of the animal heads. I don't like it.
Yeah. It's dumb.
But yeah, go check out the surveys. Fill them out. This is important if you give a shit about this game at all.
Yeah.
Because what I saw in this UA, a lot of it was not good, and they need to be told that.
Absolutely.
Hopefully, yeah. Hopefully they actually listen.
If this is what they're actually going to publish as the next edition of Tabletop Dungeons & Dragons, and you've got an issue with any of the rules, you need to let these guys know. Because if you don't tell them, they're just going to publish it. And it might darn well kill the hobby.
I mean, look, if my McDonald's burger is terrible, I'm going to tell somebody it's terrible.
Yeah, you should. They didn't cook this hamburger meat. I guess I'll just eat it anyhow.
Mm. Yeah, I wish I could have complained about that gyoza I had last week.
Oh, God. They didn't even look good.
Oh, they were not good. I mean, I don't know how you fuck up, you know, dumplings, but that place managed to.
Crunchy dumplings.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was awful.
It was not good.
But yeah, like from what I'm seeing from 6th edition, I personally am not thrilled with it. I know all of our player group that's read it have had all the same feedback I've had. Not even listening to me, it's just been this is what they're telling me via Facebook or in person. It's Waples had a lot of the same feedback I had. That's the majority of people I talk to, but even going on Facebook and reading the comments about this, because I'm in a lot of different D&D groups, it's very consistent that a lot of this stuff is not, like, players are not happy with.
Yeah. And I you can't blame them, because they're taking away certain things that are just, they've been so innate and part of the game for so long, like crits.
Yeah.
Monsters don't crit now. Spell attacks, so far as we know, don't crit anymore.
Now, I actually did leave a lot of feedback on that specifically, because I am not wholly opposed to the removal of crits from monsters. I'm not wholly opposed to removing crits from monsters and spells. But if you do that, there has to be something in the place of it. So as the example, as a player, you roll an at 20, you're just dealing double dice roll. That's fine. Yeah. If you're going to remove that ability from monsters, and I know it's been mentioned, and I'm okay if they go this route, but say I'm playing a Hydra or something, and I roll a nat 20. That Hydra needs an ability that triggers on that nat 20.
Kind of like a layer action.
Except
20 is what triggers it.
Yeah, like maybe it gets an extra attack because it rolled a nat 20.
I'd be okay with that, man.
Yeah, it's not a removal of crits. It's an alteration of crits.
Yeah, it's a different type of crit.
Yeah, and the same thing with spells. Okay, I roll this firebolt. I rolled a nat 20. Okay, maybe I can change the type of damage that was done. Maybe I can add my proficiency modifier to that damage because it critted. Things like that. It's not a removal of crits, it's just an alteration of how that crit works.
Yeah, if they did something like that, I wouldn't be completely opposed to it either.
Yeah, and truthfully, I'm actually kind of like that, because if it actually requires a lot more work from WotC.
Yeah.
Because the crit system as it is, it's very simple. Everything just rolls, double the dice. That's very simple. That requires no extra work from WotC. If you're going to change spells and monsters, every spell, every monster has to be updated with these new effects.
Yeah. Yeah. It has to have at least one small sentence attached to it.
Yeah. It is also another way to get people to buy your product, because, I can't use my 5th edition stuff now. I have to have the 6th edition to see what all the monster crits do, what all the spell crits do.
Yeah. I'd be okay with that. To an extent. Then also saying that it's supposed to be backwards compatible with 5e, though.
Well, and that being said, you can always still just run, double dice.
Fair enough. I did like that they're trying to make inspiration a little bit more prominent.
Yeah, they saw the usages of inspiration in advanced 5e. And realized, this is a resource that we have been fucking squandering.
Pretty much. And you could go through an entire campaign and probably never even get a point of inspiration as it's currently written. If the DM might just forget to do it, because that's the only way it gets assigned.
Yeah. Waple says he forgets it constantly. I do hand them out every game session, as you've noticed, but it's still not a lot. I don't hand out a hell of a lot.
No. And it's definitely a resource they need to take a little bit more advantage of. I was talking to another one of our friends and players before you came over yesterday, Muffin. And we were talking about stat bonuses. And I think he and I both kind of found some common ground on that. I would like to see your primary stat bonus be based in your species or your race. And you could get a secondary stat bonus, like your +1, pull that from a background instead of having them tied solely to your background. That way, you're not trivializing the race so much. Because right now, your race, as it stands, doesn't really matter.
Yeah. Yeah, and I absolutely pointed all of that out to him. And me and Waple spent a long time talking about it on the pod when we went over the UA, but it's just, with the current 6th edition setup and having all the stat bonuses specifically in the backgrounds, and the fact that you can literally just build anything you want background-wise to the point that backgrounds do not matter.
Yeah.
And the fact that you can play a half race, so you can have the stat bonuses from whatever race you want and still look like whatever race you want. It's all trivialized. There is no point for any of it. And there's no choices during character creation that need to be made. So requiring a stat onto a race and then another stat onto a background. Yeah, and making these requirements, not just a build what you want, then that, yeah, that actually works.
It's almost like Wizards has created, I don't know, some generic universal role-playing system instead of Dungeons & Dragons.
Yeah, which I think is the route they want to take. Their goal is to simplify and trivialize as much as possible because, I mean, listening to Waples, apparently the reason they're changing crits, and I believe him, because they are changing crits because players can't understand how crits work.
Come again?
Yeah. So you, how does a critical work when you roll an at 20 as a player in 5th edition?
Well, if I'm hitting something with my greatsword that deals 2d6, and I roll an at 20 on my 2 attack, I'm going to deal 4d6 damage.
Yeah,
I'm taking, taking my dice and multiplying it by 2.
Yeah, they are changing crits because players can't understand how crits work. And let me tell you, if that is the problem with this game, that is not a problem with the game.
That's society.
That is a societal problem.
We have failed as human beings.
So you can't go dumbing down the game just to bring in more players if that is the problem. Like 5th edition is a huge dumbing down of the game already from where 3rd edition was.
And in some respects, it needed it, though.
I'm not going to say that they are not all good changes.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it was intentionally sort of nerfed down to bring in more players. It did bring in more players. It worked.
Don't forget, we had a player in 3.5, and you know exactly who I'm talking about, that needed a flowchart to figure out how his attacks worked.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Yes, we've talked about that character on here a few times. The fact that you have to do trigonometry just to figure out how much damage a frenzied berserker, raging, giant growth barbarian would do each attack. The 3rd edition had some problems. I don't think you necessarily need to go to that extent with the game.
No.
But 5th edition just went too far in the other direction. And 6th edition seems to be going even further in that direction.
I really can't disagree, because a lot of the issues I've had with 5th edition are, it's gotten to the point where it just sometimes feels bland and uninspired.
Yeah. The role-playing of the characters is still fun. I always love my characters. But the like playing Arturo, the tiefling barbarian, is a blast because I love the character, but it's the goddamn easiest character I've ever played.
It's more or less the same with Noodle. I absolutely love being a wizard that is insecure, and fireball and bribery are the answers to everything, but he's kind of a one-trick pony, and most characters are in 5th edition.
Yeah, and you would definitely be able to say that because you have played Noodle in 2 editions.
Yeah, I have. Yeah, he was in 3.5.
Yeah, because you started him in 3rd, like 3.5, and then we swapped over to 5th at 20th level or something like that.
Yeah.
And 3rd edition, as a wizard, isn't super hard. You're not doing trigonometry just to figure out your attack ratios and shit, but
roll a crap load of dice.
Yeah, but it's definitely much more complex than it is in 5th.
Yeah. Everything in 5th edition is very streamlined, very easy. Just do what this handy-dandy little table right here tells you to do, and there's your character.
Yep, but fortunately, we still keep going with it just because the characters are fun, and the system does flow smoothly. It is well-designed, it's well-balanced.
I'm not going to knock 5th edition D&D. It's been a game that I have thoroughly loved and enjoyed playing since it was originally published. I love the game.
Yeah. Yep. All right. Well, I think we've done over an hour at this point, so.
No.
Yeah. Hey, time flies when you're having fun, man.
Holy flux capacitor, Batman.
Hey, now, don't start mixing genres here.
Too late.
All right, well, thank everybody for listening. Thank you, Mike, for filling in for Chris.
Thank you for having me. I'm glad to be here. I'd happily do this anytime.
Well, I appreciate it. Thank you, Craig, for working, and biggity bam, bitches, we're out.
Oh, he brought it back.